Hello and welcome to the Majlis Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. The people of Kyrgyzstan go to the polls on December 11 to vote on amendments to the country's constitution. This will be 8th such vote in the country's 25 years history. People in Kyrgyzstan might be used to elections, but this vote is controversial and none like the others. Not only because of its content, also because of its timing. The top among the contentious articles in the proposed draft is the empowerment of prime minister's position. Another contention is its timing, because the polling is taking place just ahead of current president's term in office is coming to an end. In other words, it's a high-profile step with lots at stake. On this episode of Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's weekly Central Asia podcast, we will try to unpack some of the coded language in the proposed changes to the constitution and discuss what do they mean to Kyrgyzstan and to the country's political future. To discuss the subject from Bishkek, Kyrgyzstan, I have Edil Baysalov, who is the political activist and former chief of presidential staff at the President Roza Otunbayeva's administration. Edil, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you, Tahir.
Very nice to have you from Washington, D.C. Dr. Erika Marat is joining us, who's the assistant professor at the College of International Security Affairs, National Defense University. Erika, welcome to the Majlis.
Good morning.
Good morning. And from Prague, joining us, Bruce Panier, who's the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Owazi. Bruce, welcome to the Majlis.
Fantastic to be here.
Very nice to have you. Now, as usual, before to kick off the debate, be reminded that please amplify, expand, or directly disagree with points other guests are making. Please do not wait for me to prompt your question so that we have a lively debate today. With this, let's start with you, Edil. A few months ago, we had a similar discussion about the content of the constitutional amendment. Then there were lots of discussion about it, but not or little clarity on what the envisioned changes were about. As people going to the vote on this Sunday, do we know at this stage what people are voting for? What are some of the main articles in the changes?
No, I don't really think that people, my compadres, have very good idea of what these amendments are supposed to bring, what kind of changes. And I like to point from the very beginning that I would not over-dramatize the significance of this vote in terms of transfer of any constitutional powers from the presidency to prime minister or impact to the future. Because I think the most important outcome of this referendum will be political, and it will be damage or maybe annulment of long-term legitimacy of Almazbek Atambayev as a defender of democracy. For better or worse, you know, he has claimed that role and title and still envisions himself for the future. But the way he managed this constitutional referendum, the way he destroyed all his relationships and generally, you know, destroyed his reputation with the public, I think it basically cancels out any supposed advantages that he's going to gain. And I don't really see many advantages that he's supposed to gain, because, you know, we can discuss increase of the powers of the prime minister, but let us not forget that actually, according to the current constitution, the prime minister is supposed to be the most powerful politician and leader in the country. We modeled the prime minister to be on par with the chancellor of Federal Republic of Germany or the British prime minister or others. The president was supposed to be the symbolic figure, but we do not live according to the constitution. We do not live according to the current constitution. And I think even with all these changes, the dynamics of the political situation, especially who will become the next president and what kind of leadership he is going or she is going to display, will have much more influence on the on our future than this referendum that we are going to forget about already next January.
Obviously, Adil, it will remain to be seen how the amendments or the constitution will be implemented on in practice. But when you look into this paper, Bruce, you had a very detailed article yesterday about that. When you look into these changes, it does indeed transfer some sort of authority to Prime Minister, which was not the case in the past, right? You know, this information is coming from Kyrgyz content, and I'm not sure how much I understood that based on efficiency that I have in Kyrgyz language. It says, like, except heads of the defense and national security, Prime Minister will be entitled to hire and fire any member of the government. Is it what you're understanding?
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. That, you know, I mean, that's one of the changes, is that he'll be able to hire and fire the ministers as he wishes. You know, and that at least that's something that's you know, it's part of the top of the government. So that's something that's going to get a little more attention and possibly generate a little bit more debate if for some reason people don't think that there's that this process is going fairly. So, I mean, yeah, that's one plus for the prime minister. I was also struck by the fact that there was the change to the article of him being able to appoint local administrative chiefs. I thought was extremely significant, too, because it as it reads in the current constitution, he does have that power, the prime minister, to appoint and dismiss local chiefs. But this is after consultations with the local councils, and that part about the local consultation with local councils disappears. So it gives him the chance to also appoint people at a very local level. And we know that this is where a lot of the power comes from when you're trying to push something through, or, you know, in cases of protests and stuff, these are the people that you really want on your side is, you know, the Akim, the governor, people like that, the mayors, all that stuff. And he's got, the prime minister now will have really absolute power to shift these people around, which kind of guarantees that he has his people in local positions around the country, as well as being able to change the ministerial posts.
Erica, there are two opinions I am getting.
Yeah.
One, Adil say that we should not be dramatizing. It's not a big uh-huh. issue. Prime Minister already has the power which he needs. And on the paper, there are a number of other authorities given to the Prime Minister if this draft is approved on Sunday. So,
right.
First of all, this comparison. Second, what the strategy you see behind this move?
So I guess my view is somewhere in the middle, is that it does, you know, it gets the way the constitutional referendum is imposed just shows that political process doesn't really matter. And whatever the changes in the constitution, it will benefit the political class who is in power, who wants to rule the country according to what they see appropriate for their political interests, for their political vision. So even if eventually, and you know, on paper it looks like this, but even if eventually prime minister's functions are expanded, it doesn't matter. The point is, Atambayev demonstrated that despite the constitution that was approved in 2010 that tried to eliminate the importance of an individual and give more powers to the parliament, despite this attempt, Atambayev still wanted to impose his own vision, and that in the future, political leaders that will replace Atambayev, they can still use the constitution or interpret it the way they want to do it. So he's undermining the political process that more or less was settled, I think, was more or less successful over the past 5 years. So that's the most troubling point to me.
Adil, what is president's own objective by this move?
That's what I actually would like to, you know, when we shouldn't be giving too much credit to Almazbek Atambayev. You know, guys, I would like to share opinion, and it's not only opinion of me, a long-term skeptic. And
I know,
vocal.
But he is the guy driving the entire discussion today, isn't it?
Exactly, but it is a stumble. I would like to reiterate that actually he has destroyed lots of legitimacy of himself, and by violating the whole political process, what Erica has been pointing out, he doesn't really have a game plan. You know, we've spent weeks, and I've spent certainly hours on telephone with international observers and journalists and analysts, they all trying to make sense out of it. And the rationale that we assign is that Atambayev is going to install a puppet prime minister, certainly not going to become a prime minister himself. He's too overworked, or maybe he's not interested. But anyways, he thinks that he's going to extend his political life and maybe even control the future of Kyrgyzstan. A week ago on his press conference, he told exactly that, that he's going to be there. And actually, he warned the next president that he should mind, you know, walk the line. But what I would like to say is that we have a divided parliament. We have a very small political fractions, the Social Democrats and, you know, are a nominal largest fraction. But what we've seen in the last 1-2 months is that basically this Atambayev coalition is tearing apart. Very most vocal loyalists of Atambayev have voiced publicly, and I know dozens more who are voicing their unhappiness and indignation privately. So basically, what on the facade, we will see this referendum pass. We will see Atambayev claiming maybe a moral victory and some mandate to you know. But basically, the most important thing what is going on in the country is the next presidential elections. And by destroying his legitimacy, by quarreling, by picking a fight with Tekebayev, with Otumbayeva, with insulting everybody else, both inside and outside the country, Almazbek Atambayev has basically signed himself out of the future, of any political future.
Okay, let's see. Bruce, let's talk a little bit about the technicality of this before we get into the political polemic aspect of the discussion. I was looking at the website of our Kyrgyz service, where they talk about the third paragraph of Article 72, where the proposed law apparently dictates the need for being a member of Jukurku Gengesh, meaning the parliament, to qualify for the position of prime minister or his deputies. What problem does this specific article wanting to solve from authorities' point of view?
Well, it keeps outsiders from ever having that post. And even if you're a member of a political party, if your political party isn't in parliament, and we did see that with Timur Saryev. So people like that would be excluded. Unless your party was actually in parliament, you wouldn't have a say. You couldn't possibly become prime minister, or actually, I think it's just first deputy prime minister is the other post that you have to have. Your party has to have seats in that. So that does exclude a lot of people. We know that Kyrgyzstan has a very, very vibrant political culture. There's a lot of figures who are well known to people, and so through this rule, you exclude a lot of people whose party might not have gotten in, and you've effectively neutralized them from getting too close to the government, because since their party's not in, they have no option to get in themselves.
Tahir, I would like to add, you know, that just like with the appointment powers of the local heads of administration that Bruce discussed, as well as this clause, I support these constitutional amendments. And I support almost like 75-80% of these amendments, because we've discussed this, and the current constitution is not perfect. I do not agree with some of my colleagues in civil society and in the political side who say that it's locked until 2020. No, it is not. This current constitution has built not a democracy, not a parliamentary democracy, but a very oligarchic system that, you know, doesn't feel shame about being an oligarchy. But regarding the clause, the changes of the status of the prime minister, it's actually to fix the problem, and it's actually we are supposed to have it. You know, you cannot imagine Chancellor of Germany or Prime Minister Italy or Prime Minister, especially Great Britain, to become other than a party of the victorious political party that receives popular mandate. It's not supposed to happen in parliamentary democracy. The head of the political party is supposed to successfully form the coalition majority and serve as prime minister. And we had that working in the first years of this constitution. But what happened was that especially with Emirbek Babanov, who was the second prime minister after Almazbek Atambayev went on to become president, you know, because of the manipulation and schemes against him, after he was fired from prime minister, he was basically thrown out of politics. He was in the cold for 3 years, and he was out of parliament. And this can happen to any ambitious political leader. And we've seen in this parliament that actually most ambitious political leaders, they do not want to leave parliament. They did not want to become prime minister. There was no competition to become a prime minister or deputy prime minister. Instead, they focused on the great struggle for the speakership, because you know, you can lose that fight, but you still remain a member of parliament. And therefore, this is a compromise that I actually was arguing that the whole cabinet is made up of members of parliament, of elected members of parliament, who could keep the seat in parliament. I think it also saves a lot of money and saves a lot of, you know, backbenchers coming in and just, you know, being a keg in the wheel, you know. But the prime minister, even if he loses, you know, the majority, even if he goes into the opposition, he has the seat in the parliament to return to and lead the opposition inside the parliament. I think it's an important fix that I actually welcome very much and have proposed and fought for adoption in the before.
Okay, thank you, Adil. We will go to a break shortly. Before that, do you, Erica, have anything to add on the political aspect of proposed change?
I think the most outrageous amendment is making Kyrgyzstan not obliged to follow international rulings on human rights violations inside Kyrgyzstan. That's very troublesome. But it doesn't matter whether we agree or disagree, because the process, the way it was imposed, there was no political debate, there was no public debate on this. And without this debate, whatever is the outcome of December 11, it really doesn't matter. It undermines the more or less stable political process with this imperfect constitution that was established since 2010, very much reinforced by competitive and unpredictable elections and some kind of resemblance of political debate inside the parliament.
That's interesting. Now, I want to go to a break, but one question is popping up. Adil, you mentioned that, and Erica, you are talking about this repeatedly, saying that there was no political debate. So what was happening from last several months? Kyrgyzstan has a vibrant political culture. When we discussed this last time, it was like a month or 2 months ago. Then we were talking about that there is no debate. Now we are talking about there was no debate. So what was happening, really, Adil? Why people were not debating?
Again, we've seen this president praise the current constitution and commit several times publicly that he is going to be the first president who is not going to touch the constitution. And we've seen him change his opinion several times last year. And then again this spring, he said that he's not going to change the constitution. And suddenly he just wanted to change it. And actually, quite frankly, I will admit that Atambayev did have the opportunity, if he wanted to, he could declare himself maybe not president for life, but he could actually push through a term extension, say that he didn't have enough time and that we should strike down one-term limitation on the presidency. He could have done it.
I understand, Adil, but in terms of the debate, that you are saying that there was not enough debate about this. I mean, what was preventing this from happening?
There was some resemblance of debate inside the parliament, but, you know, we know that this parliament is an oligarchic parliament, basically handpicked by Atambayev and his cronies, and most of the political actors, they are focusing on the next presidential elections. And so I know several leaders who chose not to pick a fight over these constitutional amendments, which we all agree they do not matter, because they do not want to destroy their chances or to enter the fray too early, you know, because it will burn them before they can rise in the presidential polls. So I told you guys, many people have tried to look into this from the rational point of view. There is not much. It's not serving lots of interest of President Atambayev. he is doing something which he thinks is actually increasing his chances or strengthening his future, but it's not. And so do not look for any rational answers about it, because we don't see them. We tried, we looked for them. There are no rational explanation from the sane, from the point of view of sanity.
Okay, so these were some of the political stuff, and there are a number of other articles which talks about a variety of issues, and people in Kyrgyzstan has only two options, either to say yes or no in entirety. Also, the proposed draft talks about many other issues, such as the family life, human rights, so, etc. So what is Atambayev's intention, and what does these changes really mean to his own and future of the country? So we will continue our discussion with these topics shortly. First, let me recap the debate. Today on the Majlis, we are discussing the upcoming controversial referendum on amending the Kyrgyz constitution and what does it mean to the future of the nation. Discussing the subject with me are Edil Baysalov, the former chief of presidential staff at the President Roza Otambayeva's administration, Dr. Erika Merritt, the assistant professor at the College of International Security Affairs at National Defense University in Washington is joining us. Also, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Uwazi with us. Today, he is joining us from Prague. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So, okay, we spoke about political aspects in details, though we will continue talking about this shortly. But first, let's touch some other interesting articles. One of them talks about the family code, the Article 36, paragraph 5. More clearly, it bans same-sex marriage in the country. What is the background of this issue? Who wants to take this question?
One point I'd like to make about this, you know, the about this and the other point which was mentioned by Erika earlier is that lots of these amendments, they do not matter. They don't just make sense.
I understand, Edil, that, but the fact that this is there on the paper, so what is the background where this is coming from? Especially about this, the proposal about banning the same-sex marriage in Kyrgyzstan.
We cannot ban something what we don't have. We do not allow same-sex marriage. It's just the constitutional language that discussed persons instead of a man and a woman, you know, that who can marry. But, you know, that language was there. We sometimes made fun of it. But, you know, no single pair of people have ever registered or have even applied to register marriage, same-sex marriage. Therefore, this is a ploy. This is a ploy which is being used that because people don't understand. To make it simple, they'd love to say, and again, you know, we've discussed it for many, many times on your radio, how they are using this homophobic propaganda you know, to reach completely different political ends. For example, what Erika talked about how this constitution is going to cancel our commitment to rulings by international human rights bodies. Actually, it's not true. We are part of the international conventions, of the human rights conventions, of the civil political rights of the United Nations, which we are bound by additional protocols. You know, we can have that language in the constitution, or we cannot. But as we know, international treaties are above prior to the domestic legislation. Therefore, constitutional rights of our citizens to be heard in the international human rights bodies, and then human rights bodies appealing back to the Kyrgyz authorities, it remains. But you know, we've had dozens of rulings by the United Nations Human Rights Committee or on dozens previous, you know, judicial cases, which Akayev, Bakiyev administration simply ignored. You know, because the United Nations Human Rights Committee has ruled, for example, on the case of Felix Kulov, and they simply, archive administration simply threw that out into wastebasket. You know, it was never even publicized. The same could have been done, for example, on Azimjan Askarov's famous ruling this spring by Human Rights Committee. But it's just overreaction, it's just a hysteria, and then it turns out into cancellation of this Article 41 of the Constitution of the Kyrgyz Republic. But even that doesn't matter. For that to matter, we have to withdraw from dozens of the international human rights treaties, and it's not going to happen. I hope so. We're not going to leave the United Nations this. So, you know, on same sex, on this, on others, it's just lots of noise, lots of hysteria, lots of propaganda, but they don't make sense, and they're not going to achieve anything, but just other than, of course, increase xenophobic inclinations of our people, and it's, of course, it's not very good.
No, the fact
can I just follow up? I'd like to follow up on this. Sure. I would respectfully disagree with Adil for instance, same-sex marriage. Of course, it doesn't happen, and I agree that we can't ban something that does not exist. At the same time, not adopting a law that would criminalize gay propaganda, you know, mimicking similar law in Russia, that's already a step forward. Not normalizing it in a legal sense, that's a step forward. Legalizing it and making it a constitutional amendment, that's a step backwards. Even if it doesn't really match the reality. You know, if we think long term, not increasing discrimination is a step forward. Same with international agreements and you know membership in UNHCR. Yes, UNHCR recommendations were ignored when it came to Askarov, when it came to Kulov, and maybe some other cases. But making it a norm, a constitutional norm, is a step backwards. Even if this is not the reality today, it's a step backwards. And it's just this victory for those very authoritarian tendencies and, you know, patriarchal values that are now bound by constitution. This is turning attention away from issues of forced marriages among women. That's a way to turn a blind eye on discrimination against LGBT groups. And it's, you know, turning... It's actually legitimizing government's inadequate response on Askarov's case to UNHCR, which became a more of a prominent international issue for Kyrgyzstan than Felix Kulov back 10 years back.
Bruce, please correct me if I was wrong in describing the article on LGBT community. That was, what was that? Article number 36, paragraph 5. So the second, what do you think, who was the target here?
The target was the conservative element in Kyrgyzstan that doesn't believe that there should be an LGBT community, and is against this, you know, these kind of alternative lifestyles. I guess I'll use the thing. I mean, this was, in some ways, this is just a populist move. I agree that it doesn't really change the actual reality of the situation on the ground now. But there are people in Kyrgyzstan, and there are groups in Kyrgyzstan who fear these kind of, you know, the whole concept of LGBT. And so without really doing anything to act against the LGBT community, this at least gives... you know, throws something to the people who have been against these kind of ideas, the conservative elements, you know, where they can say, okay, well, like I said, the article itself doesn't ban this, but what it does say is that you know, basically marriage is between a man and a woman, and they have the right to create family. So it doesn't say you can't be gay, whatever. But what it does say is that they won't recognize this, which is, as has been pointed out, is pretty much the truth anyway. But if you're one of those people who's against the whole idea, the whole concept of LGBT community and their lifestyle, then you look at this and go, okay, we get something out of this, you know, when in fact they're not really getting anything they don't have right now. So, you know, it's a populist move.
And the other article, that is article number 41, paragraph 2, on the citizens' ability to seek justice beyond border of the nation. So what is your take on what we discussed so far, and what is your understanding from the article itself?
I have kind of a slightly different interpretation. Now, again, there is a sentence right before that that says that they're bound to international agreements that they've signed. I think what the change is that they're not bound, that ultimately the laws of Kyrgyzstan are in some ways superior to the international agreements that they've signed in certain cases, so that they can, if there's something that they're uncomfortable with that the international community, the UN, whoever, is telling them to do, that they can resort to their own legal code and say, that's good that you say that, but in this instance, our law or our rule on this is the superior ruling on this issue, because it's something that affects our country specifically in a way that could be negative. That's kind of how I see that. They're not withdrawing from anything, and they're not saying that they won't, that they just won't heed what the international community says, but it does give them exceptions to international rulings with which they do not agree, and they feel that their laws, the laws of the country, are better suited to address specific cases than are the international laws.
Okay. Did we cover all the articles? Anyone wants to add anything else on this section?
I love the ecocide law. I'm still trying to figure out how they're going to define that. I understand it's aimed at Centerra and Chinese mining companies, but that one really kind of threw me, that you would include that there's no statute of limitations on trying someone for genocide or ecocide.
What's the significance?
No, on genocide, of course, it is international human rights law that there is no terms of limitations on the crimes against humanity. We knew that, but exactly. The same legal experts, and Erica was completely right when she said that people in Kyrgyzstan, we do not know which of the prominent lawyers and legal experts, constitutional experts, actually drafted these amendments. This is the first time it's happening. We've seen much worse, and I've seen much worse, most certainly when I used to be an active civic activist in the Akayev times. We've seen some amendments which just made you cringe and cry and lose sleep. I'm not losing sleep over these amendments, but I'm losing sleep over incompetence of our legal profession, which puts this type of mistakes, as Bruce mentioned. What is ecocide? Or, for example, they are dropping the statute of limitations retroactively on one set of crimes around the gold mine Kumtur. You know, what is that? What that has to do with pursuing justice? And actually, this goes against not only the current international obligations of Kyrgyzstan, it goes against the whole of current civilization from the times of the Roman law. You cannot adopt a law, much more severe law, that will strike you right retroactively. And how is it going to fly? Well, I know Erica is right. Okay, we didn't have the political debate inside the country. We are having an authoritarian leader thinks he has the legitimacy to push through his vision. Okay, we've seen that. We've seen that with both Akayev and Bakiyev. It could have been much worse, actually. It could have been much worse. Again, I would like to reiterate, Atambayev could have stayed forever if he wanted to. Yes, it could have some disorder, civil strifes, and et cetera, but it could have gone, it actually comes in our country a few months, a few years after this type of madness. But what makes me cringe, what makes me feel acute shame, is complete disregard to the international reputation of the Kyrgyz Republic. This legislation, this constitutional amendments, this text of the constitutional amendments, I believe, is going to be in the legal textbooks in the best universities around the world. Because I remember when we grew up, we used to read about, banana republics in some parts of, Caribbean or, Central Africa, who simply didn't care or didn't know better. I think for the first half of the 21st century, the current constitutional text, which is not going to last for long, I commit our country that we are going to strike it down quite soon with the next president. But the kind of disregard to the basic international norms, that they didn't even consult the Venice Commission. They don't care about opinion of the leading international lawyers or bodies. It's striking. It's striking, and I feel shame.
Okay, Etel, this is what we have. Whether we like or don't like, whether we agree or disagree, this is what we have, and this is what Kyrgyz people are going to vote on Sunday. So the fact that Atambayev took so much risk to push for this, where does it put him the day after his presidential term ends?
This all depends on the next presidential elections and who is going to be president. And given the calendar, maybe it will be some wishful thinking, you know, some disclaimer on my part, but he has a very short runway, or maybe he's actually out of time, out of cards to put install his loyalist as the next president. He lost the legitimacy, he has very low popularity. Whatever remains, he's going to burn out by the end of the next summer. It all depends, our future depends on who is going to win the presidential elections.
Okay. I think Erika wants to leave us. If Erika, you are still here, final point from you.
I am here, yes. What will happen to Atambayev after the elections? Well, he's going to retire in his beautiful, expensive house, just similarly to his predecessors, but unlike his predecessors in his home country. He's not going to go down in history as a reformer or someone who changed the country for the better, unfortunately. He lost this opportunity.
Okay. Bruce Panier, with this, we would like to end the discussion. So what would be your final thoughts?
There was no reason to hold this referendum right now. Kyrgyz, this has been a very difficult year throughout Central Asia, mostly for economic reasons. But Kyrgyzstan was sailing through this year better than anyone else until they brought this referendum thing up. And there was no reason to do it. It almost guarantees it's going to be a contentious presidential election campaign next year. It gives fuel to the opposition to interpret these changes the way they wish, to get more support from their groups. And it was just trouble. It's trouble to do this, and we're not done with the referendum. Like I said, this is going to reflect greatly on what happens next year once we start the presidential campaign.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owozi. And also, big thanks goes to Dr. Erika Marat, the assistant professor at the College of International Security Affairs at National Defense University, and Edil Baysalov, the former chief of presidential staff at the President Roza Otunbayeva's administration, for joining today's majlis.
Thank you.
Thank you. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.